Morning.
Morning.
These are all my children. Right, Jim?
He's talking to you, Andy.
Jim.
Good morning. I'm going to conduct an experiment this morning. Use you as my guinea pigs. So, Mindy and I have been laying brick at home, and we've been listening to the radio. And I'm not a big radio listening to her, but I do from time to time. But we've been playing the radio in the background, country music. And I started noticing, we've been like, I get home from work, we lay brick like every night on the, and we have the radio on for 3-4 hours. And I started realizing that I was thinking about all these songs and this stuff was playing around in my head. I'd wake up and I'd literally, in my dreams, I would dream about these stupid songs, and I would wake up with a song, or I'd be dreaming and there'd be a song in the dream, or I'd be driving down the road and I'd be humming a song. And it was getting into me. So the Lord started speaking to me about that and saying, what you put in is what comes out. Right? So this morning, the sermon that I'm going to preach, I have no notes. This may be a complete bomb, but I've been putting in this story at a high, high level, like a radio level into me all week. Like what I'm going to share with you this morning, I've spent hours and hours and hours of listening to commentary on it or studying it myself or thinking about it, lots and lots of input. So basically what's going to come out of me this morning is what I put in. Does that make sense? So with that being said, I'll try not to be emotional. Hey, surprise, I'll probably be emotional. But we'll get through it. It's a great story. But before we go there, I want to talk about a childhood memory that I had, one of my earliest childhood memories. And I remember it. It's probably the first thing I remember. So I was in my backyard, and a very bad man was there with me. And that very bad man is here this morning. Who's that very bad man? Chris Pranger. And I owe a lot of the grit in my teeth and the spit in my eye to Chris Pranger, but it's okay. So Chris decides that him and me and Nick should have a pair fight. Okay? Chris is 23 years older than I am. I'm kidding. He's not. But he was older. So it was me and Nick versus Chris. And I was little, and I don't remember it very well. Nick would have been like, if I was 4, say Nick's 7, Chris is like 12 or whatever. So anyways, we're throwing pair. Yeah, 18. I like to tell people Chris is like 24 and I was 4. Because that's how I remember it. So we're throwing pairs at each other, and I get hit in the head with a pair. Remember, I'm just barely out of car seat here. So I grab my head, and when I come down, I have mush. And I think it's my brains. And I think I'm dying because Chris threw a rotten pear at me, hit me in the head. And I literally am like bawling and going, my brains are coming out. And I'm going to die. And Chris and Nick are like, shh, wait, just wait. Trying to keep me from going in the house. So anyways, that was one of my first childhood memories. I remember it. It was very early on in my life. What does that have to do with the sermon? Not much, actually. But I do want to, we're gonna talk about a child who had a traumatic experience when he was young, around the age of 5. So, we are going to open up to Samuel. I'm going to read out of the NIV this morning. 2 Samuel chapter 4. I'm not going to make it through this without... So I'm going to give a little backstory. We're going to talk about King David and Saul and Jonathan and a little boy named Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. Who in here, show of hands, knows who Mephibosheth is, not to be confused with Melchizedek? Few? 20-30% of you? Mephibosheth, the story of Mephibosheth is... a story, it's a hidden gem in the Old Testament. It may be one of the two most expressive pictures of how we are seen by God in the whole Bible. I think it is only rivaled, this story is only rivaled by the prodigal son story. So this story and the prodigal son story are maybe, in my opinion, I'm sure there's others that I don't know about, are the two most, pull the curtain back, how is God view me? How is he sealing me? How is he seeing me? How is he dealing with me? That's an awesome story. So you must know a few things before we start. King Saul was king of Israel. King David was prophesied to be king as a young boy, but Saul was king. Saul felt threatened by David, his whole kinghood, and many times their relationship was back and forth. David would serve King Saul, but King Saul was trying to kill King David many, many times. And for years, he chased him around and tried to kill him. Well, a little nugget in this story is that as they were being raised, when Saul was still serving the Lord, he had a son named Jonathan. And Jonathan and David became very close. Like, loving brother close. Like, I love you, whatever. This relationship happened, and so one day, they made an agreement. So Jonathan and David, King David, Goliath David, were younger, and they made a covenant. And Jonathan said, David, I'm heir to the throne. When Saul dies, I'm going to become king. Okay? But when that happens, I'm going to forfeit my kingship to you. I'm not going to become king. You're going to become king, and I'm going to get behind it. But here's what I want in return. I want you to take care of my family. I want you to take care of me and all my seed for as long as you're on the earth. And here's what I'll do. Whenever my dad is trying to get you, to kill you, or he has plans against you to do you harm, I will let you know. So they cut this agreement, David and Jonathan. All right, I'm good. So they cut an agreement, and it was a covenant. It was more than a promise. So what was going to happen was when King Saul gave up the kingship and Jonathan was to take it over, he was going to forfeit it and give it to David. Problem is, there was a battle. There was a great battle. Israel was out fighting. King Saul and Jonathan were fighting in that battle. And both of them were a force to be reckoned with. Like they were warriors. They were men. Like they got it done. Like Jonathan was just as big, strong, and tough, and killed 10 to 1 in battle. Saul and Jonathan were both killed on the same day in the same battle. So, mass chaos. Number one and number two, dead, one day in battle. The two top guys in the army and leadership of all of Israel are dead in a moment, in one day. And so, mass chaos. Think about it. If our president and the vice president are both killed same day, we're vulnerable. People are scrambling. People are running for their lives because word comes that King Saul and Jonathan are both dead, and that army that's killed them is pursuing us, and people are freaking out, running out of their houses and trying to run and hide. And that's where we're going to pick up this story. And so Jonathan had a son named Mephibosheth. And he had a nanny that she was watching him, okay? And so the story picks up chapter 4 in 2 Samuel. When Ishbosheth, son of Saul, heard that Abner had died in Hebron, he lost courage and all of Israel became alarmed. So now Saul's son had two men who were leaders of raiding bands. One was named Banana. Banna and Rechab, this is not even part of it, but anyways. So Jonathan, son of Saul, had a son who was lame in both feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. His nurse picked him up and fled, but as he hurried to leave, he fell and became crippled. His name was Mephibosheth. Okay? Jonathan and David had a covenant. Had an agreement. Mephibosheth is 5 years old. His dad, I'm assuming, did not sit down with him when he was five and explain the deal between him and David. Right? So, as King Saul and Jonathan were killed, of course, they were making haste to make King David king. So, King David swept away, people are scattered, and everything's kind of at a loss until David gets into power, gets his army straight, and then starts rebuilding the kingdom and taking position and defending the homeland, and things start turning around and going very well for a long time. David keeps getting more powerful, and his thing keeps going. It's David. I can't look at you. Stop it. So David keeps getting more powerful as he's going. And 10 years goes by, 15 years goes by. And one day, chapter 9, move over a couple chapters. David wakes up in the morning. So David wakes up one morning, and David asks, "Is there any still left in the house of Saul who I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake? Is there anybody left?" So David wakes up one morning, he's like, thinking about Jonathan, thinking about the covenant, thinking about how things didn't go, how they planned. They talked about how one day Saul would die and Solomon would come, and there'd be this great ceremony, and Jonathan would be there to help, to be there for the kingship, and all these great plans, and how they would divide the kingdom, and Jonathan would probably be right there with him and be doing all this, and it didn't work out that way. And David's king, and he's doing well. Like, it ain't like he's got a bad life. Like, he's got it going on. He wakes up one morning, he remembers Jonathan. And he says, "Is there anybody left? Is there anybody left in Jonathan's household? Is there any seed of Jonathan's on the earth that I may show kindness to them?" Now there was a servant of Saul's house named Ziba. They called him to appear before David. And the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" "Your servant," he replied. So there was a guy. He said, "Hey, is there anybody left?" And he said, "I don't know, but there's a guy who's working for us right now who's named Ziba, and he worked for Saul." So he was there. He worked for Saul. So David's like, "Go get him. Bring him in here. I'll talk to him." "Your servant," he replied. The king asked, "Is there no one left in the house of Saul to whom I can show kindness, God's kindness?" Ziba answered the king, "Oh, yeah, there is. There's still a son of Jonathan, but he's crippled in both feet." David? "Yeah, there is. There's seed left, but he's crippled in both feet. You're a king. You don't hang out with cripples. It's not good advertisement. He's crippled in both feet, Your Honor. Where is he?" the king asked. Ziba answered, "He is at the house of Machir, son of Emil, in Lodabar." So King David had him brought before from Lodabar, from the house of Machir, son of Emil. When Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he bowed down to pay him honor. And David said, "Mephibosheth, your servant," he replied. "Don't be afraid," David said to him, "for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table." Mephibosheth bowed down and said, "What is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me?" Then the king summoned Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, "I have given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons, your servants, are to farm the land for him and bring in the crops so that your master's grandson may be provided for. And Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, "Your servant will do whatever my lord the king commands his servant to do." So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah, and all the members of Ziba's household were servants of Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table, and he was crippled in both feet. Where to begin the story of Mephibosheth? It was not unheard of for a king to find the descendants of the previous king and have them killed. Because Mephibosheth was heir to the throne. Before Jonathan and Saul were killed, Mephibosheth was not crippled. He was completely healthy. He was a growing young boy with all the heritage and lineage. He was heir to the throne to be king. And now he's a cripple living in Lodabar, hiding for years. And what happens in a normal situation is that festers. I'm supposed to be king when I'm 6 and 7. How do I, by 10, I'm supposed to be king. My grandpa, my dad, I'm supposed to be king. I am going to plan how I'm going to become king. And so they start building this narrative and they start building plans their whole life. So a king would know that that is existing, right? So he would want to eradicate that. So a lot of times kings, after 10 years or so being king, they would find the remnants of the other kings and they'd have them killed. So Mephibosheth's been hiding in Lodabar for years under the cover thinking, "I'm crippled. I'm not going to go try to take the kingship. I don't have some great plan. I'm just going to exist and hide here in Lodabar and never tell anybody anything and just try to be here unnoticed. And one day, the king's boys come to town. They're like, 'Where's Mephibosheth?' 'What do you mean? What do you mean, where's Mephibosheth?' 'He's crippled. There's a crippled guy in your town. Somewhere here in Lodabar, there's a guy named Mephibosheth. And he's crippled. You know where he's at? The king wants to see him.'" Okay? Before we get to the end of the sermon, you need to know you're Mephibosheth. We're all Mephibosheths. The king is summoning us. The king wants to see us. And we don't know what he wants, and we're scared he wants to kill us. And he shows up with his men. And his men are saying, "Come with me. We're going to see the king. And you're sure that you're going to your death." Okay? He's already had it rough. He's already lost everything. He's crippled, not by anything he did wrong. He's crippled because in one day, grandpa died, dad died, and I got crippled on the same day and lost all my inheritance, lost everything that was coming to me. I was going to be number one, and now I'm number none. All stripped away. One day. Gone. And now this King David, some guy, is king. And my best plan is to hide from him. And today, he has found me. And he wants to see me. I'm going to die. Okay? When he gets there, he falls on his face. He says, "Your servant. I'm your servant." He had more right to that kingship than David did. Carnally. It was his throne. And now he's bowing before that king and saying, "I'm your servant. I'm crippled." What did David say? "Don't be afraid. I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to show you kindness. Why? For Jonathan's sake. You know why you're Mephibosheth? Because David is God and Jesus is Jonathan. I am here to show you kindness because I have a covenant with your dad. I cut a deal with your dad. Maybe before you were born, probably before you were born. I have a covenant with your dad, and I don't break covenant. I'm a man of my word. And Jesus is a better Jonathan. Do you remember when I cut the covenant, I displayed the covenant between God and Jesus, where God and Jesus walked the covenant with Abraham? They made a promise, walking up and down that covenant. I'm going to do this, and you're going to do that, but one thing I'm going to do is because of you, I'm going to show them kindness. Restore all that he has coming to him back. Here's how I'm going to show you kindness. I am going to restore everything that's owed to you back. You will get everything you got coming to you. You know, as Christians talking to me, it's easy to look behind and say, "That's a loss. I'm going to move on from there, and I'm going to pray that God blesses me tomorrow." If we do that, we're going to miss a huge part of who God is. He wants to restore. He is in the business of restoration, not only blessing, but restoration. He restored everything back to Mephibosheth. But Mephibosheth, in his own sense, was king over everything after that moment. "You will eat at my table like a son." It says in there, "You will eat at my table like a son for the rest of your life." Do you know how many times it says that in like 10 verses? Four times. Four times. It says, "You will eat at my table all your days like a son." A cripple. Somebody who's imperfect. Who ain't got it all together. Mephibosheth's name means shame, and Lodabar means no pasture, desert. His name means shame. He said to King David, "I am a dead dog. Why are you blessing me, showing me kindness? I am as a dead dog. I am worthless. I have crippled feet. I am a bad person. I'm not worthy to sit at the king's table. You're right. You're not. And he's not. He's not worthy to sit there. But because of Jonathan and the covenant that I made with Jonathan, because of Jesus and the covenant that was made with Jesus, if you're in his lineage and you're in his family, you get a seat at the king's table. It isn't about what you do. It isn't about what you've done. It isn't about what you're going to do. It's about what he did. I'm not doing this on behalf of you. I'm doing it on behalf of him. I have a covenant with Jonathan. I have an agreement with Jonathan. And because I have that agreement, you get to partake of all that Jonathan would have. All that's rightfully Jonathan's. Everything that's potentially and the whole kit and caboodle of everything that Jonathan was heir to is now yours. And you will always eat at my table. The father sent his men to get a cripple like you and I so that he could eat dinner with him every day. Chris preached a sermon. I wasn't here, but I listened to it. The Father wants to have dinner with you every day. Man should not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. It is food to eat with the Father every day. And he is preparing, whether you eat it or not, whether you come to that table and eat or not, there is a plate set out for you with food on it every day. And that's the Father's will. Four times you will eat at the table with me all my days. Mephibosheth was wrong about David. Mephibosheth spent his whole life being wrong about David and built a whole life around his idea of what would happen if David ever found him. Admittedly, I'm afraid of God. I'm standing here telling you, I'm scared of him. He scares me. I'm 47. I've been alive long enough to know I'm scared not to be on his team, and I'm scared to be on his team. But I am equally as scared not to be on his team. I am equally scared to not know where he's going than to be scared about where we're actually going. But I'm scared. If his guys come rolling in here and says, the boss wants to talk to you, I'm like, about what? Hopefully about Jesus. Not about me. It scares me. He's scary, but he's not. Look what he wants. Listen, David's God. You're Mephibosheth. What you think about God has zero effect on the truth about who he is and what he wants to do. Just because you built your world around what you think God is has no bearing on whether that's actually true or not. None. You're probably wrong. I'm probably wrong. He could be ticked off that King David is the reason he has broken legs. He's the reason he's living running on the run. He's the reason he's living in a desert. He's the reason he doesn't tell anybody who he's related to. He's wrong. David remembered that there was a covenant 20 years, but if you'd have told him at 5, Mephibosheth lived in Lodabar, he'd have went and got him then. David was not more passionate about the promise 20 years later. Where that seed was, God's interested. If you're a seed, God's interested. He wants you to eat at the table. He wants to restore you. He wants you to reign over his blessings. Because he's God, and he wants to show you kindness because of Jesus, because of a covenant he cut with his son. There are few stories like this in this book. You can't misunderstand this. The king wants you blessed. He wants to eat with you. He wants you at the table all the time. Do you know how the story ends? You know what the last verse is? He was crippled in both feet. He was still imperfect. He was still messed up. He didn't get fixed. It didn't change. It didn't change that he was still heir. He was still eating at the king's table. He was still flawed. Grace has no place to operate if there's no imperfection. Grace has zero value if there's no imperfection. The only place grace has to go to work is when there's imperfection. In our crippledness, we need the grace of God. And our crippledness may never go away, but His grace is sufficient. His grace is sufficient for where we're at. And though we're walking through difficult times, you can think, God put me here. You might be wrong. You might be wrong. That's why the only way to know and trust the Father is to eat at His table every day, just like He plans. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be Thy name. Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. What a story. Jesus is the superior Jonathan. This story preaches itself. I encourage you all to meditate on it, think about it, and read it. This story and the prodigal son show that the Father's not maybe about what we all think He's about, or that He's not keeping score like we all think He is, self-included. What a picture of grace. Stand with me, please. Lord, I pray that today, like that soil is so dry outside and that rain quenched this morning, that for anybody that's here living in Lodabar, who thinks their name means shame, that You sent Your Son Jesus as a replacement, as one who cut covenant with. And Lord, You wake up in the morning and You say, is there any seed of Jesus down there that I may show me my kindness? I want to show them kindness. I want to restore to them what has been taken from them. I want to give them blessings. I want them to eat at my table every day. Lord, we thank You that that's even a possibility. We love You. Amen. You're dismissed.